It's morning. It's a Tuesday morning. It's a temple morning. Of course, off to work, normal. Oh, okay. Did you keep? Forgetting to park backwards, which would make me getting out in the morning I think less obnoxious for my neighbors. So I turn my headlights on and I start driving off. Like I said, if I go backwards, my headlights don't shine up. I haven't had any indication of whether they cared at all about this. But it was just attorneys. I think it was attorneys. I don't know. It's hard to know. Now, it's another neighbor out here. There's no other way to drive than down this road. Never going cross country about it. About thinking about the not judging. I'm not going to say I'm a better person. I'm cheap. I've always tended to live. The really bad parts of things. But I haven't lived in the good parts of town. In fact, I don't think we ever have. I think. Well, on 4th Street, I think we lived in a better part of it. was very aware and it wasn't just a sense of expectation. It was often not one off. It was stated. I'm not going to say it's good or bad. I don't think it falls into that realm. My neighbor, who is a good person, came from a Mexican background. Whether his background had much to do with how he felt about his fence. I've spent more time and effort about honoring his fast than about any other aspect of my home and property maintenance. Both Saturdays, I still live about a block and a half away from that house. We owner finance sold it to the person, to the folks living in it now. And it looks like somebody has kept up with this very strident Uh, care of what basically became a trench. The two houses aren't exactly on the same level. The neighbor's house is on a lower grade. I'd explain it more, but it's just silly. I use it as sort of a weird example to introduce the whole idea of, I don't even know if it's judging, of learning how to live together in peace. In that situation, to live next door to that neighbor required a lot of input from me to establish and maintain peace. We didn't talk much. The few times we did talk, seemed to indicate that he was simply tolerating me, and what I was doing was not really adequate to whatever he wanted, his standard. And if I did offer him some larger service, it was basically to say, well, I'm a better person than he is. I don't know what that is. I don't know of any cultural or religious tenet that would say that I was being a good person about it. Well, I don't know where that stopped. Probably a while back. Anyway, I've always been, you could call me poor, I mostly said cheap, because I think being poor has a bit of a virtue to it, and I don't claim any virtue. Until really recently, when we moved back to Tucumcari and moved into my mom's old house, yeah, that got quick claim deed to us. We had always lived in what I felt like we had always lived in circumstances that were beyond our means. The vast majority of people do. It's kind of an American thing, you know. You have a house that you really can't afford. You furnish it beyond your needs. and you spend a good portion of your free time. This is called keeping up with the Joneses. And I was never a proponent of that. So I've always been kind of the trashy neighbor. Although I have to say, in Oklahoma City, the circumstance of the place where I lived was wretched. When there was an ice storm, you were locked in, and I had to go to work, you know. I had a job where you had to be there. You couldn't work from home. I still have jobs that if the tendency is that you really can't work from home. Can't be done. I've always been a very nervous person about work. I wanted to try to meet expectations, but circumstances were often not very good. And I'm not saying I was all that good. And says my patriarchal blessing, I'll be happy and content with my life. And let me tell you, I don't know what kind of a lobotomy I would need in order to be happy and content with my life. I'm very grateful for Lisa, I'm always caught between neighbor expectations, and frankly, Lisa expectations. She had come from a very I don't want to say poor, I don't want to, you know, sorry, it bugs Lisa highly. She came from very meager family. All the times both her parents worked. She actually lived in a little itty-bitty room with three of her sisters, and her dad had made a three-tier bunk sleeping situation for them. So you can see how tight that situation was. They were bunks that kind of were like Murphy beds almost, folded into the wall so that you could have a little space so it could be more of a bedroom. But you had to get the beds out of the way. And of course, she shared that space. They actually ultimately turned her space after the kids were gone. They turned her space into a walk-in closet for the master bedroom. That shows you how small the bedroom really kind of was. It ultimately became a walk-in bedroom. Well, a walk-in closet. And not a really big one. Just a decent one, but it was a walk-in. You know, they took out the beds, among other things. You know, nice job. Her dad was no slouch when it came to making things work, but it was a tiny house. They ultimately turned the garage into a living room and turned the living room into more bedrooms, so that more people could have bedrooms. And they still weren't very big bedrooms, but they had daughters. And the daughter's married, divorced, had kids, and moved back. They ultimately raise one of their grandchildren. And I don't judge, but, you know, come on. You can say these things are circumstantial, and you choose to do those things, and people live the lives that are presented to them. My family was very different. I don't know what my mom's attitudes really were about anything. My dad left home. My dad did not have good relations with his father, my grandfather. And ultimately, he left to go into the military early. He was like 17. He didn't graduate from high school. He eventually got his GED. I think he did. He surely did, because he went on and got a bachelor's degree later in life. But he was tired of, I don't know if he was tired of selling. He was a good salesman, I tell you. He did very well off the sales. Anyway, but my dad had this thing about, you know, you need to get up and get out, and you need to make your way. And I think that's what both me and my brother did. When it was interesting that when my brother got out of college and got, anyway, at some point in his adult life, when he was married, he actually lived with those grandparents, my father's parents. I've never asked him about that experience. I never asked him about, you know, because it was always kind of like, well, you're a grandfather, blah, 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 you know, stuff like that. And I just realized that I didn't put on deodorant today. But I don't have to live cheek by jowl with my coworkers. It's a good thing. Because I might not be very pleasant to be around. Well, anyway, and so for me and my brother, it was this whole thing about getting out. Now, that meant you didn't live under my father. And I don't know if that was really ever exactly what he intended, but I think I was raised by this thing that you shouldn't live in your parents' house after you're 18. My wife, who was 6 years older than I am, so when we married, she was in her late 20s. Her biggest thing was she did not want to be... She didn't want to go down the road that her family went down. I don't think she was... I don't know. I think, you know, it's always quite complicated. I think she always felt like her father was a little bit distant when they were younger. Now, there were five girls. She was number four of the five. She was a middle child, so that was always tricky. And she often talks about the fact that she felt like she was just ignored. I was strange. My father did not understand me. And it's like, well, I don't think I presented anything worth understanding. I was bizarre. You know, I kept mostly to my room, doing things. I lived with my brother when we were very young, and that made the relationship between me and my brother very strained. They always made sure we had separate rooms after that. Once we moved to New Mexico, once we got out of California, we had separate rooms. Anyway, so, you know, Lisa always loved the beautiful house, the big house, and wanted to make hers beautiful. And I always felt like I was a great failure to her because I didn't make enough money to please her sensibilities. And she didn't have like crazy sensibilities, so it's not like, well, it's her fault. She was so demanding. Rah, 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 rah. And I'm sure I got upset with her sometimes about it, saying, what do you want? You know, and what I always decided was I need to make more money. If I want to make this woman happy, on any sense at all, I better give her more money so that she can do the things that she would like to do. I think ultimately we kind of settled down. I still ask her, well, probably more often than it's decent, whether her circumstances are okay, and I think she's just resigned herself to some things. You see, I had great grandiose plans for this house, how much that she was going to expand its square footage and go into great debt, because she always loved having a really big kitchen. She loved the kitchen that she had in Oklahoma City. She loved the kitchen that she had in Tucumcari. Becoming even a more of a maintenance problem than it already was. But anyway, I was always quite nervous with the job that I had there in Tucumcari. They really didn't pay all that much. It was okay. I'd say I was kind of middle of the road. But something was going to happen to that job, and they were going to decide to get rid of that position, and I would not have that job anymore. I probably didn't have to be so worried about that, but to be honest, I don't know. Anyway, What I was getting to in all this stuff wasn't to talk about that, because I don't really care, except to say that we don't really know people's lives. Boy, nobody knows mine. Lisa's the one that knows most about it, but to be honest, I think she's far more concerned about her feelings and her reaction to it than looking at it, what's a good word for it, objectively. Got a foot bite. Always back. But I tell you, if I try to get ahead of it and say, I know it's always backwards, and turn it the other way, invariably, it would have been right the first time. So you can't play that game. I hear other people that can play that game and how wonderful it works for them. And it doesn't work that way for me. I always put it on backwards. Always. I really have to work at it for a minute or two until I've gotten it. And that's just the story of my life. And I've come to find out that it's really not all that true for other people. Like, I said, I might be a pretty good comedian. But I can't talk about my life in my experience, which is the vast majority of comedy these days. Because the basis of it is it has to be relatable to the audience. Have to tell your stories, which are really their stories, in a funny way. My problem is I would have to make up stories based on what I see of other people, which you're not supposed to tell stories about other people, because you're going to offend them. And that's a real put off, is to offend people. So, if I were to talk about, my perspective on things, it would have to be the alien talk, and I just never thought that would really fly very well. You spend too much time trying to find common ground between me and the audience, and good luck. It ain't gonna happen. Anyway, so I got up this morning, and this is where it all started. I got up this morning after having had this, it's a dream that I can't remember. And most of my dreams I can't remember, but it leaves impressions with you. And so it made me think about the impressions that I had, and I'm running out of time, because I'm going to work. I don't have a lot of time. Everybody's got their brights on. About how we can judge people by their surroundings. I have friends that are in very trashy surroundings, and it just seems to be them. Sometimes people at church will say, let's go clean up their place for them. Just as far as I'm aware, I'm striving to find just something to do and to be able to hang a little placard of, hey, we're charitable people on it. And I don't, every time I go over in this lane, I know that I can't stay in that lane. I don't learn very readily. The friends who are really trashy have a trashy place. Don't like going over their place, and I think they're really self-conscious about it, so they don't invite people to their place. It's not a thing. I think sometimes it's to the point to where they don't want you to come home. But I've got this weird responsibility, sort of. I'm glad that there's ministering now as opposed to home teaching in my religion, because you wouldn't be able to home teach these people because they really don't want you to come over the house. And they'll make excuses for it. Sometimes they'll just say, oh, the house is a wreck. Please don't come over. And it's like, well, it's always a wreck. It isn't like, I haven't gotten around to cleaning, since they really haven't gotten around to picking up things, particularly for the last, as long as they've lived there, you know. It started out nice. Anyway, so, it isn't for a lack of resources either. You know, you can't say, well, it's because they're poor. And you go, well, it depends on how you look at it. You can call it poor if you want to. It says, and that's, you know, and I'm not gonna try to disavow anything. I get into enough trouble saying the things. Oops. I also shouldn't get in this lane. It's in a construction. It's been this way for months. And yet it's like, you're not paying attention, Debra. You're not seeing what's here. Wreck I am. Anyway. And how many people are like that? I just tend to turn a blind eye to it. Just don't think about it. Although I'm sure they say, oh, all they do all day long is just look in here and say how much of a dump this is. And I would say most people would do that. I wouldn't be surprised if my wife, that was her primary attitude about that. Anyway, so I was thinking about that, and I was listening to the morning general conference talk. I don't really remember much about that, except that it seemed to highlight this. Well, it seemed to bring to my mind this whole thing about, well, you know, Latter-day Saints have a big thing about cleanliness. I think more than other cultures. It was a Brigham Young thing, I think. It was about industry, and it was about having a very nice, presentable house and yard and things like that. And so one of the, I think it's less spoken things about Latter-day Saint culture, and I think why it doesn't work very well in a place like Tucumcari very often is that it has a lot to do with being tidy. And that's a big thing. It's almost like the 11th commandment. Thou shalt be tidy. And it only really kind of come to the check gate. Be ready for this. And how that was never a thing with me, I would have people I would baptize some really, you know, people say, oh, it's humble people, and you know, yeah, but they're untidy, and that's a real problem for Latter-day Saint. Like I said, you know, there's people who they say, well, let's go clean up their place, and you go, now you do know that 10 minutes after you've cleaned it up, they'll start trashing it up again. Anyway, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing? Thank you. And of course, they don't understand that, you know. Well, they just haven't been able to keep the law of Mormon tidiness. Because they've been sick, or they didn't have enough resources. And it's like, no, it's just the way they are. They're trashy. Doesn't matter, you know, it's not a question of money, trust me. It says, they made fine money. There are 5 adults in this household, and any number of other ones moving in and staying for a while. And, you know, that's, you know, I think it is indicative of the word of wisdom, that is, you know, and they're going to say, oh, this isn't true. And you go, guys, just, it's your highest law, your highest, trust me. I said, I used to think that smokers were at their very heart evil. It took me a long time to get through the fact that smokers weren't evil. They were just people who smoked. And there were some really wonderful people who were smokers. But it's still kind of ingrained in me a little bit that smokers are bad people. Because, and it wasn't helped by the fact that the biggest thing that would keep you from being a Latter-day Saint, that's why I said it's their highest and holiest law. You know, Jesus Christ, who knows? If Jesus Christ had been a smoker, he would be soundly rejected by Latter-day Saints. Especially the cultural ones. And we have a ton of cultural Latter-day Saints. The vast majority of them, especially if you lived in Utah, it was cultural. All these rules that had to be kept, it was part of the culture. And you would fight. You wouldn't fight for the stuff about loving God. Now, you don't fight about those things, you know, like in legislation. In America, you aren't allowed to do that. You're supposed to have it. Therefore, you're supposed to keep it out of every other realm. A funny thing about America, too. Anyway. Yeah. And to be honest, I probably listened to too many people who were lying to themselves, which is another big thing about America, is that you lie to yourself all the time. And of course, being of an autistic bent does not help, because there's a lot of things that you must lie about. You cannot be honest and be accepted as an autistic person. You just can't do it. My wife is watching The Good Doctor, which is based on this thing, which was about this autistic doctor, or this autistic medical student. He was doing his residency. I guess he ended up getting his doctorate. I don't know. Anyway, and about how he had to try to deal with people. And it's bringing up stuff about me, saying, you know what, I'm much more like him than I am like anybody else, although I don't like being the depiction particularly. He is more autistic than I. Of course, they say he's a savant. And you go, okay, since now that's a thing. Now, we've always tried to figure out whether that was just an environmental or whether he was actually wired that way. Usually, a savant, it seems like they're wired that way. Except to say, you know what? If we put people under extremely stressed circumstances, we can sometimes get amazing things out of them. That's where comes the really pushy, horrible, kind of Steve Jobs-ish sort of management style. So, you know, and a lot of technology kind of rode on this stuff, the whole thing where you practically lived at work. And let me tell you, it was you living at work. It wasn't like you were up there and you guys were watching TV all evening, and then you would go and crash on your hammock. And then you'd wake up at a normal time, you'd get up, you'd get things pulled together, and all of a sudden it was 8 o'clock, time to go to work. No, you actually might take, you know, 10 or 15 minutes or an hour, and you would do something else, but then you would go right straight back to it until you finally just dropped asleep in your cot. And you would wake up at some ungodly hour in the morning, kind of like me, 4 in the morning or something, and you would get right back to it. You know, you were kind of, you were this thing. Anyway, so. This is probably one of those days I should park out here in nowhere, no man's land. Save myself a 5-minute walk. But I'm here, so I'm going to do it. I'm the worst, aren't I? Oh, okay. Well, there's that. Parking my spot. This is where they park stuff. It's not like people, it's organizations. Anyway, okay. We're done. We're going to stop. Bye.